Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Seth Diamond, Commissioner of the New York City Department of Homeless Services. You just mentioned who you're serving, keeping that front and center, and I'd like to switch our focus to that. And there's a typical perception about homelessness that a homeless person is predominantly male, perhaps ill, mentally ill, and living in the street, living on the street. Perhaps you can shed some light and clarify some of the misperceptions highlighting the population that represents the majority of the folks you serve.
We have a homelessness system that involves 250 shelters, about 8,500 households, and about another 8,000 or 9,000 single individuals in the system. Those people, to most New Yorkers, are not a fact of their day-to-day life. They live in shelters. The shelters provide quality services. In the communities in which they live, many people are unaware that there's a shelter down the block or three doors over. We've made a real investment through what we call outreach to try and help people on the street get off the street. We have people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that are out on the city streets approaching people who are living there. The people who are living on the city streets are not doing it because there's not space for them. We would gladly accommodate every one of them or make sure we could. They're living there because they've made a choice that they don't want to. Often that choice is unfortunately because they are not thinking as clearly as we would like because there's mental illness or substance abuse involved. Sometimes it's based on a misperception or an old perception of the shelter system as being a dangerous place where they don't want to go. And so they remain on the city streets. Numerically in New York City, most of the homeless are families. In the shelter system, there are about 8,500 families, so about 17,000 children would be about 25,000 people altogether. And they're typically a mom and two kids who have come into the shelter system, sometimes for economic reasons, sometimes for domestic violence reasons, sometimes for substance abuse reasons. They are not coming from living on the street. They're coming from living with somebody else. And that somebody else, that relationship, has run into some difficulty. The single shelter system, almost 70% of the people there either come straight from their own apartment or an apartment that they were sharing with somebody else. So the perception is a little bit different than the reality. And because most people do come from living with somebody else, we think that creates opportunities before people get settled in the shelter system to try and work with them to see if that might be an option instead of coming into shelter.
Well, you mentioned earlier that New York is considered a leader in this area and innovative common sense approaches to handling this issue. I'd like to talk about a particular program, the Home Base program. Could you tell us a little bit more about this and what are the two principles that sort of frame the purpose of this program?
Homebase is the umbrella that we use for our prevention strategies. I was talking a little earlier about how we try and prevent homelessness before it occurs, and we do that primarily through our Homebase program. And Homebase is a network of organizations throughout the city. There are 13 offices that work in communities throughout the city, particularly ones where there are a number of people that are at risk of homelessness, and they try and intervene as early as possible to prevent homelessness. Very often it's very old-fashioned casework, working with families who have employment issues to try and get a better job, working with families that have financial budgeting issues to figure out how to make their money stretch a little bit further, working with families that are in dispute with a landlord about how to get an advocate for them to confront the landlord if the landlord is trying to do something that's wrong. Number one, the most important principle is we have to work with the families early, because if by the time they come to shelter, they've often exhausted every alternative. They've been evicted from the apartment, or the discord that drove them has so frayed the relationship that it's not an alternative to go back. But if or their money has been totally exhausted, so they have nothing left at all. But if we can get involved early, often we can deal with this situation. So we've tried to publicize Homebase more, make it more known in the community so that when people run into difficulties, their first option is not to run to shelter, but to come in. So early intervention. And then the second is flexibility. One of the great things about Homebase is they don't have a set of rules and say, this is it for you. They know, the organizations involved know that their caseworkers have to potentially do almost anything from, as I say, employment work, financial planning, just counseling, getting involved and on the phone with mom to say to mom, don't you want your daughter to come back? Can we work out this issue that about a curfew that caused her to leave the home? So it's really trying to do what's really targeted and individualized for the person who's in front of you and being flexible so that you can do almost anything to help that family.
I'd like to keep on that program. You mentioned earlier Mayor Bloomberg's focus on performance and measurement, and we are in an era of fiscal austerity. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how you're proving or evaluating the home-based program. Could you tell us a little bit more about your efforts in that area?
Yeah, that's a new area that has had some controversy about how do you actually measure it. And in the social services area in general, not just in homeless services, but in a range of social services, there's always been a thought that doing prevention work is better because you can prevent people from having to fall into really hard times. But the traditional argument against it has been that it will be more costly because there'll only be, for example, in the shelter world, 100 people that will come to shelter, but if you have to serve 1,000 people in a prevention way, you're spending money on 1,000 people when only 100 people will actually need the service. And so some would argue it's too expensive. Wait till they come to shelter and deal with the 100. Don't deal with the 1,000 who have a range of needs, some of which may come to shelter, some of which not. We've tried to deal with that argument by hiring independent research firms and working with researchers at leading universities to really study the home-based program and to really look at that critical issue of, but for home base, but for our prevention, would those families have come to shelter? And we did about a year and a half ago, we started a study that we took two groups, a control group and a treatment group, 200 in each group. One group got home-based services, prevention services, and one group got other services in the community but not home-based. And then we're following those families for 2 years, and we want to compare, do the families that got the services come to shelter at a different rate than families that did not get the services? And we also have other researchers looking at different aspects of this issue about, can we target the services? How do you know family shows up and says they have rent difficulties? Some of those families, if you don't do anything, will come to shelter. Some of those families, if you don't, may have friends or neighbors or somebody they could stay with, and so they wouldn't come to shelter. How do you know the difference, though? How do you target your resources effectively to those who would come to shelter if you weren't there? And so we have researchers looking, and we've been very successful, I think, at both designing effective screening tools so that we know who are the most high-risk candidates. Not that people who are low-risk don't get services, but they get services at a different level. But people who are at highest risk for shelters, you're investing the most in. And so we have a very good screening tool that we have used after researchers looked at this issue, compared rates of people getting the services with those not getting the services. And we have this larger project that with the 200 families in each group that will be released soon that I think will firmly answer the question of whether the services are cost effective.
Seth, would you tell us more about the Prevention Assistance and Temporary Housing Family Intake Center? What types of services are provided there, and how have you sought to modernize the family intake process?
Well, one of the major investments that Mayor Bloomberg has made in reforming the shelter system is making a better front door for families. When he came into office, all families went through an office in the Bronx called the Emergency Assistance Unit, or the EAU. It was a horrible place. Families often stayed for days there. There were no sanitary conditions. There was no place for people to wash their hands and before they were eating, or for the doctors who were working there to have sterile facilities. And again, the process was very long and laborious, so that families would sleep either outside or in the office with children for days on end. And it was really a horrible and an embarrassment for the city. So one of the major investments that has come to fruition just last year was a new office that was the central intake. It's a $70 million facility in the Bronx called the PATH office. It's a symbol of the investment and that the city recognizes that families that have no alternative should be treated professionally and fairly and in a dignified manner. families who come to that office, we are able now to process in a number of hours. Nobody stays overnight at the facility anymore. When they come in, they go through the interview process, which I'll talk about in a minute, and then we move them right from there. We have buses that take them right from there to shelters throughout the city, depending on their assignment. So it really is a reformed physical structure, but more importantly, a reformed process that treats people, again, professionally and fairly and with dignity. So we have staff that after a basic intake process meets with staff from the one of our sister agencies, the Human Resources Administration, to do work that will be involved in seeing if there are alternatives, looking at where you lived before you came into shelter, seeing what resources might be available. Is there a family or friend? Is that apartment that you just left because you thought you had no alternative potentially available again? Would mom, who kicked you out last night, be open to some kind of mediation so that we could have you go back there? Would your brother, who says he can't afford to have you there anymore, if we could connect him with food stamps or public health insurance, would the financial issues be less so that he could? They do that work every day with everyone. About 20% of the people that they see, they're able to find alternatives for. So that is a very significant effort. We also do a lot of casework at the beginning when people come in, ask people why they're there. As I said, unfortunately, a lot of people come for domestic violence reasons. We have a whole domestic violence screening process to assess the risk, to see what the situation is. And then if people really need specialized domestic violence services, the city has a whole separate system of domestic violence shelters that people can go into that offer heightened security and services around domestic violence. We do an extensive interview to try and understand the family's background, the needs of the children. Right on site at our offices at PATH, we have staff from the Department of Education so that school issues can be addressed. We can check on attendance. We can try and confirm in placing somebody in shelter the needs of the children in terms of schooling. We also have staff on site from the Child Welfare Office in New York City, the Administration for Children Services, or ACS, to look at any child welfare issues that might be of concern to us to make sure that we're aware of those and addressing those. So we have a number of city agencies on site, and our goal in that initial interview is to get everything we need so that we can determine where they should be placed. Our goal is for families with children to try and place them near their school that their youngest child is in, to make sure we're aware of any security issues so that if they have a domestic violence issue, we don't place them in a place where their batterer might be conscious of.
New York has employed a lot of innovative strategies to reduce the number of folks who find themselves homeless and on the street, like Safe Haven is a good example of that. Could you give us an overview of some of the other strategies you've used?
In 2007, there was a total redesign of the street services. The city was, for contracting purposes, we used boroughs, and each we assigned one contractor to each borough, and they were given performance targets and some performance payments based on their success in their particular borough. So you could have real accountability for the population based on who was responsible. You knew who was responsible for a particular area. And we also redesigned and developed a particular type of shelter for people on the street. Again, people on the street, as we were talking about before, often would not come to a shelter. They thought it was too big. They didn't like the rules. They might have a perception of it being violent. So we designed Safe Haven, which is a particular shelter that's smaller. It's a little more intimate setting. Some of the rules are relaxed. And we have found that people on the street are willing to go to those. So it's an example of always trying to look and really talking also to the people we're serving and trying to understand their needs and make the programs more effective. We've also done a lot of work on veterans, which is a big issue, across the country about how to serve veterans. Yeah, New York City in 2006 convened a task force with the then Secretary of Veterans Affairs and Mayor Bloomberg that revamped the way we provide veteran services. New York has one of the best collaborations, or probably the best, with the Department of Veterans Affairs. We have a joint intake So veterans who are homeless, who are coming to us, go to this office that has HRA services for social services and cash assistance. The VA is there, and the Department of Homeless Services are all there in one building. And we can really put a comprehensive plan in place. And we developed two dedicated shelters just for veterans so that veterans can have targeted services. There are a lot of resources available for veterans, both from a housing point of view and from a support point of view. And having people in these specialized facilities allows us to better target. Also, veterans have particular needs, support needs and things like that. So having them clustered in two facilities helps. So that's another example of some of the specialized work we've done.
How is the city using common sense approaches to make a difference where it counts most? We will ask Seth Diamond, Commissioner of the New York City Department of Homeless Services, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.